Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday through Thursday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain the Catholic faith. Friday, though, the table's open. The doors are open. The automatic doors are open. The automatic doors that were invented in ancient Greece, or at least a very early concept idea of them. That is what we're talking about today here on the Council of Trent podcast. Well, not just early automatic doors from ancient Greece, but five forms of technology that are way older than you think. Now, you might think a lot of technology that we have was invented yesterday, like, the electric car. Where did the electric car come from? Well, Elon Musk was just said, I'm going to make this company Tesla. Here's your electric car. There you go. Though some of you might have remembered, I remember electric cars before I ever heard of Elon Musk. So the first ones I remember, I remember watching a documentary on National Geographic that talked about not just electric cars, they were solar cars. They were cars that had solar panels on top of them, and they were really, really low to the ground. They had like one room for one guy to like lay back in and like scrunch in, and they would test them out on the salt flats in the desert, and they got really good speed and did really well. But if that's the kind of car you want, you know, more power to you, but kind of need a little more oomph for everybody else who, you know, has kids and car seats and stuff you want to take around. So what I want to talk about today are these five technologies, and there's lots more. I could even do maybe other Free for All Fridays on other technology that is a lot older than you think. But these were five that really stuck out to me. So let's jump right into them. First, I mentioned cars. I mentioned the electric car, which is older than you realize. But the car itself, the automobile, is older than you might realize. So when we think of like the first automobile, right? What do you have in your mind when you think of the first car, the automobile? Most people think of the Model T by Henry Ford, you know, in the early part of the 20th century. But there was a working mobile auto-driven, not driven by horses or anything like that, not like a steam engine that runs on tracks. This was created by a French army captain, Nicolas Joseph Coudenot, born 1725, died 1804. And he created this device in, I think he started work on a small version of it in 1769. And then in 1770, he had a full version of the thing that he created. He called it a Fardier à Papier. And all my French listeners, like, you have butchered our language. What are you doing? Now it's turned into Austrian. We're not Austrian. And so essentially what it was a big tricycle with a large steam boiler on the front of it. So it's interesting if you think about it. You know, when we drive cars today, the engine is in the front. So this one had two back wheels, and then it had a third wheel. Didn't have a fourth wheel. It had the third wheel in the middle in front of the driver and the steering wheel. And then in front of that was this kind of large steam boiler or steam engine. So it says here the vehicle weighed 2.5 tons, and so it went about 2.25 miles an hour, so a little over 2 miles an hour. It says the vehicle was reported to have been very unstable owing to poor weight distribution, a serious disadvantage for a vehicle intended to traverse rough terrain and climb steep hills. Because it's hard when you make the first car. You don't have roads that are designed well for automobiles. You have roads that horses traverse if they're carrying carriages, but not just for cars to go around. It says, in addition, the boiler performance was particularly poor, even by the standards of the day. The vehicle's fire needed to be relit and its steam raised again every quarter of an hour. So every 15 minutes, you had to restart the steam engine, which reduced its overall speed and distance. But it was the first working automobile. And it also has the reputation of being in the first car accident. There are reports of a minor incident in 1771 when the second prototype vehicle is said to have accidentally knocked down a brick or stone wall, either that of a Paris garden or of the Paris arsenal walls, perhaps the first known automobile accident. Now, what happened to our amazing inventor, Nicolas Joseph Coudenot? In his later life, following the French Revolution, Coudenot's pension was withdrawn in 1789. And he was sent into exile in Brussels, where he lived in poverty. Shortly before his death, his pension was restored by Napoleon, and he returned to Paris, where he died, though, October 2nd, 1804. So maybe we should give the award for first car not to Ford, but to Cugnot. I'm butchering that, but you know, I'm doing the best I can. So let's move then so we have our first car, first prototype automobile, 1770. When will we have the first electric car? And actually, you might think, oh, I guess that'd be like the later 20th century, right, to have an electric car. Actually, no, electric cars have been around for a really long time. And among nobility and the upper class, when they were first created, electric cars were considered superior to cars that had internal combustion engines. That internal combustion engines were for the peasants. It's for the people who wanted to be covered in smoke and gas and ash and be coughing all the time, instead of having a battery that would be able to run your car. So there's a great article about it in Car and Driver magazine. So here's what it says a little bit about where some of those cars ended up. Start in the 1830s with Scotland's Robert Anderson. So we're going all the way back to 1830 is when we have the first electric car, whose motorized carriage was built between 1832 and 1839. Using batteries to move it. However, the batteries, they were called galvanic cells at that time, were not rechargeable. So it says here it was more of a parlor trick than a transportation device. You could get the car to move on its own. Hey, no horse is carrying this thing. It's moving by itself. It's a neat thing to be able to see, but it's not useful transportation because once the batteries run out, then you have to swap them out for new batteries. So it's not a reliable form of transportation. A bigger, better version of the electric car demonstrated in 1841 could go 1.5 miles at 4 miles an hour, towing 6 tons. Then it needed new batteries. So this one, we still haven't gotten to the rechargeable batteries yet, but it could go further, it could carry weight. And that's actually pretty decent if you think about it. Carrying 6 tons is a lot of weight. Even, you know, it gets a mile and a half in 15 minutes. That sounds about what I could do, but it could carry 6 tons. I can't do that. So it says this impressive performance so alarmed railway workers who saw it as a threat to their jobs that they destroyed Davidson's machine, which he'd named the Galvani because it used galvanic cells to power it. Batteries that could be recharged came along in 1859, making the electric car idea more viable. 1884, Thomas Parker deployed electric powered trams and built prototype electric cars in England. And so it continued on going into the 20th century, and they were quite popular. In fact, William McKinley, when he was assassinated, actually, he was taken by ambulance to the hospital, and he was taken in a electric-powered ambulance. So he actually survived the gunshot, William McKinley. This was on September 6, 1901. But then he died from a gangrene infection, I think, about a week later. And so some people said that he should have the honor of being the first president to ride in an automobile. Would have been McKinley when he was taken to by ambulance, by an electric-powered ambulance. Though a lot of people will credit that to Theodore Roosevelt, his successor, who took a public ride in a car, a Columbia electric car, mind you, in 1902. And so as the cars continued in the early part of the 20th century, before we get to Henry Ford, like I said, a lot of upper class preferred them. They were somewhat reliable. The 1923 Detroit Electric could go 25 miles an hour, and it had a range of 80 miles. But the catch was that, like today, electric car, once the production process was scaled up for regular cars with gasoline and internal combustion engines, it was much cheaper. Why doesn't everyone drive electric today? Because electric cars are more expensive, obviously, and they don't have as much range as a car that goes on gasoline. And the other thing that's really holding back electric cars now, honestly, cost is one thing that's coming down. Cost is something that will be much easier to defeat in making electric cars popular than the charging problem. The charging problem is really what is holding back electric cars. Because think about, like, I just took my family over the winter, you know, over the Christmas holiday to Phoenix, to New Mexico. We drove, oh my goodness, 1,500 miles, you know, each way, I think. I mean, we basically drove across a third of the country, you know, almost half the country. It was about 1,500 miles. It took us, you know, 10 hours and 6 hours of driving. How did we drive? I'd say 1,200 miles. But regardless, and the kids did great, by the way. They were real troopers. But to go that far, you know, we burned a significant amount of gas to do that. To charge electric vehicles, if you have the most basic charger for an electric vehicle, it can take you all night, take like 8 hours to charge an electric vehicle. You have a basic charging thing in your home. And that's what most people consider using electric cars. You drive around town, you do a short commute, pull back into your garage, and you charge it during the night. And as long as you don't drive more than like, you know, 100 miles from your house or something like that, or 50 miles from your house, it works great. But if you want to go on these longer trips, well, you would need, instead of a gas station, you would need a charging station. But the problem with charging stations is that if it's a basic model of a charger, what are you going to do? Like when we would go on our road trip, you know, we're in and out of the gas station in 10 minutes, ready to go, got to keep rolling. Imagine if you had to be there for hours on end to charge your car, to try to drive across country. Nobody would do that. Even the more advanced chargers, they can still take a decent while, maybe not over an hour, but they can still take time to charge the vehicle, and they're much, much more expensive. So that's the problem here. So with the Model T came out, it said that the first Model T cost $850 in 1908, when most electric cars were twice as expensive. By 1923, the Model T was under $300. And so that made it way more affordable. Electric cars were 10 times as expensive. The Detroit Electric Upgrade Battery Pack cost $600. Now, wealthy people like that because it was cleaner than gas engines. They were very, very, very dirty at the time. Think about the decades before you have catalytic converters and things like that. But even still, the battery itself was the same cost as two Model Ts. So only the elite would have them. And even then, they started to warm up to the Model T and other internal combustion engines with the creation of the electric starter. It did away, you didn't need to use a hand crank to get the car going. It had an electric starter, and that allowed it to be a lot less noisy, a lot less pollution, things like that. But then, you know, electric cars persisted for a while after that. So I've gone on a long ways about the history of electric cars. Really fascinating where it came out, but big oil won the day when it comes to that. All right, here's the next one. The next one is going to be the fax machine. When you think about a fax machine, I mean, I haven't had to use a fax in the longest time, but I remember some insurance companies will say, we'll need this, you need to sign this and then fax it back to us. I'm like, I got to fax it to you? So I'd have to go to work and use the fax machine that's at work, because who has a fax machine at their home? I mean, some people probably do, but I don't. So how old do you think the fax machine is? What we would consider the telephone fax machine was invented in 1964 by Xerox, but it's actually over 100 years older than that. Alexander Bain says here in this article, in 1843, invented the electric printing telegraph. So remember, you have telegraph going back into the early part of the 19th century, like Morse code. But using the same principles of telegraph, he could create an electric printing telegraph. His development simulated a 2D image on paper, taking the limited communication potential of telegraph to another level. The invention wasn't widely tested, but it was the catalyst for improved versions, including one by Frederick Blakewell in 1847 and Giovanni Caselli, who made the first commercial fax system in 1863. In 1902, they were able to use this technology to create an optical scan function developed by Arthur Korn. This allowed photos to be transmitted. And so what happened here in 1902 to do this, totally changed newspaper and journalism. So these early primitive fax machines, they weren't used primarily for communication between people necessarily, but the ability to take a photograph, break it down into a facsimile of a two-dimensional electronic image sent over telegraph wire, means if you had a story and you had a picture to go with the story, you could send the picture along with it. AT&T advanced this with wire transmission of photographs in 1924. And then that, you know, so that allowed for journalism and the spread of, you know, articles and stories to advance at a much faster rate. All right, here's the next one, the machine calculator. You know, think about calculators. You've always got I love the little plastic ones that have the four tiny solar panels in it to keep it operating, and that you worked in as a kid. Some of you might have spelled out naughty words. Shame on you for that. But what are the first calculators, right? You might have put that in the 20th century. Maybe maybe they got something. They came up with the wires and batteries and stuff. And they had something in the 19th centuries when they came up with the first machine calculators. Because you go back to ancient China, they have the abacus, right? But that's not a machine. It's just a bunch of beads to help you keep track of counting, right? It's the first calculator might be the abacus. But I'm talking about a machine that can add, that can do sums, that can do mathematical operations for you. And actually, the first machine calculator, first popular one, would be Pascal's calculator. So Blaise Pascal, in the middle of the 17th century, that's in the 1600s. Pascal was a philosopher. He was an incredibly intelligent individual, a writer, but he was also a mathematician. And he's most famous nowadays for Pascal's wager, his argument for a pragmatic argument for belief in God. But he created a mechanical calculator in the middle of the 17th century. It looks like a little box with six wheels at the bottom and six number slots at the top. And you would dial in with the wheels to be able to come up with the numbers that you would wanted to process in order to add them together. It couldn't do direct subtraction, but it could do indirect subtraction with something called Nines complement, which is a principle in mathematics I couldn't possibly explain to you, but it is a way of being able to do indirect subtraction on a machine that can only add things together by turning gears. So that's really remarkable that even in the 17th century, you had people inventing these early devices that would, this would become, I mean, this is the progenitor of, you have the computer and other kind of technology is just gears and on-off binary numbers to be able to, it didn't use binary, obviously, but it shows how mathematics is the language of the universe and it's something human beings can readily tap into. So the first machine calculator, that would go to Blaise Pascal. He designed the machine in 1642. He went through 50 prototypes before presenting it to the public in 1645. He built 20 more during the next decade. And the King of France, Louis XIV, stop making fun of accents. I'm sorry. King Louis XIV of France gave Pascal a royal privilege or a patent for the device. Then others like Gottfried Leibniz, known for the Leibnizian argument for the existence of God, Leibnizian contingency argument, expounded upon it to try to add a multiplication feature. But Pascal is the OG when it comes to digital or machine calculators. All right. Now what I referenced at the beginning, we're going to go all the way back to ancient Greece for the next three of these inventions that you would think are modern, but are way, 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 way older than you would have realized. So the first one is the vending machine, right? When you're a kid and you see a vending machine, it's like there's a halo around it and you hear the angelic chorus. Oh, there's a magical box that has Kit Kats, Doritos, anything I want. If I just could find some quarters, it could be mine. I can have soda even if my parents don't let me. If you happen to be out, you'd always beg your parents, please, can I just get a few quarters? I remember when I was a kid, when I was a kid, you could get sodas for 50 cents out of a vending machine. I go a lot of places now, it's like a dollar for a can of soda. Are you kidding me? So how old are vending machines? Well, really the first one that we have to go to would be in first century Egypt, actually. So I guess we're a little bit past ancient Greece. One of these might have been from ancient Greece. Maybe they're all from ancient Rome. Maybe the Romans stole it from the Greeks and rewrote the history books. I don't know. That would be Hero of Alexandria, an engineer and mathematician in first century Roman Egypt. And he created a vending machine for holy water. It took a coin. When you put the coin in, it would fall in a pan next to a lever. The lever opened a valve and a little bit of water would start coming out. It was holy water that I guess had already been blessed. And then the pan would tilt until the weight of the coin made it fall off. Then a counterweight would snap the lever and turn off a valve. So you put a coin in, a little bit of water comes out, and then it stops. And so it's amazing, actually, in ancient Rome, they had a lot of technology that ended up getting lost for the next 1,000 years, like the vending machine or indoor plumbing wouldn't be discovered until reinvented over 1,000 years later. Coin operated machines, though, that dispense things like tobacco products. You can find them in taverns in England in the early part of the 17th century. Then later, Simon Denham was awarded a British patent in 1867 for the first fully automatic vending machine. But so, I mean, even earlier than you can imagine, even in the 17th century, you have machines that will automatically dispense things like tobacco. But we'll give it to Hero of Alexandria, who also, by the way, is credited with the first proof of concept. We don't know if he actually did it, but for the automatic door. I mentioned that earlier, right? So, you know, it's always fun, you know, when you have little kids. I had a friend of mine who once said, I told my three-year-old once, look, Daddy's a Jedi. And he moves his hands and the automatic door opens. The first automatic door, Hero of Alexandria, had a concept of it where it would be for theater. When someone was walking through a door, it would look like the door just opened on its own by somebody activating a series of water bucketed pulleys that would move the doors sideways. So earliest proof of concept there for the automatic sliding door. Interestingly enough, on the Star Trek television series in the 1960s, the automatic doors there were not truly automatic. When people would walk through them, you had stagehands that would pull the doors back. At least I'm pretty sure that is the case. I remember, I think, Leonard Nimoy talking about it in an episode of The Simpsons. But I'm pretty sure that's right. If that trivia is not right about Star Trek, let the wrath of the angry Trekkers be upon me. Wrath of Trekkers. Wrath of Khan. Khan! Star Trek, Wrath of Khan. Star Trek 2. Excellent. Excellent film. All right, here's our last one. Fast food. How old is fast food? Really, really... really old. Going back all the way, you can find well-preserved ruins of essentially what were precursors of fast food restaurants in Pompeii, Herculaneum, and Ostia. They're well-preserved because Mount Vesuvius blew up and covered them in ash. So they were called Thermopoleums. So a Thermopoleum, literally a cook shop. Thermopoleum would be a place where something hot is sold. So it was probably in early ancient Rome. You had Thermopylaeas. These were basically, if you saw the one in Herculaneum, you'll see it. It's like a long table with four open pits on it. And the idea was that food was cooked hot and fresh right there. And then it was, you would eat it there, or you eat it on the way to where you were going. So it was literally the first fast food. It says in Latin literature, they're also called Pompanae, Copanae, Hospitia, and Stabula. But archaeologists call them Thermopylaea. Thermopylaea are forerunners of today's restaurants, and the items served in them are sometimes compared to modern fast food. These places were mainly used by those who did not have their own kitchens, and sometimes led to Thermopylaea being scorned by the upper class. So isn't that, some things never change, right? Oh, McDonald's. Jim Gaffigan has one of his best comedy sketches is the one he does on McDonald's, and he says, I like eating at McDonald's. Love the silence that follows its statement. You know, when you say that, people are like, oh, I didn't know I was better than you. But actually, I don't know. I think I already talked about this maybe on yesterday's episode, or I will soon. I film these out of order so I can never remember. But I basically have kind of had to say bye-bye to fast food in the new year with my new diet. Catch my previous episode if you missed that, or it'll be coming up soon. But if I was in ancient Greece, I'm sure the fast food there was way, way, way healthier than what we have today. Well, hey, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed expanding your mind. Five inventions older than you may not have known might have some interesting party trivia for people. But thank you guys so much. Hope you had fun today. And I just hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.